from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this Monday edition of Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm your host, Ryan Porth, joined this evening in studio by Adam Fingan of The Athletic. Adam, how are we doing this evening?
I'm great, Ryan. I'm in studio with you. I'm looking forward to that as always. What I'm not looking forward to is staying up late to watch this Predators game, which I think starts at 9, right?
It does.
Oh, man. I'll try to get through it, but if I'm already recording it. It's already set to record on my DVR in case I fall asleep.
So. Well, if you don't like 9 o'clock starts, I think tomorrow you're going to like 9 o'clock starts because it's a 9:30 start tomorrow night in San Jose.
Yeah, I'm probably going to have to record that one.
Well, tonight's game, Preds-Ducks, pregame at 8, puck drop at 9, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Adam, Saturday afternoon, the Preds on the road against the Dallas Stars. And as that game went along, especially in the second period, I just did not think the Preds were going to win that game. They trailed 1-0. They trailed 3-1 going into the third. And then they eventually trailed 4-3 after tying the game. They tie it with 42.5 seconds to go in regulation with Roman Josi's power play goal and an empty net. And then Matias Ekholm wins it in overtime. And here was the call from Pete Weber.
And the puck cleared back to center. Subban on it there before Devin Shore can make the play. In for Turris. Coming on late, Ekholm. He scores! Matias Ekholm cruises in. Took the pass from Kyle Turris. And what a comeback by the Predators. A goal by Matias Ekholm for the Preds to win it 5-4.
Pete Weber on the call for the Predators Radio Network Saturday afternoon. Adam, the Preds are now 8-0 after that comeback victory. 8-0 on the road.
Yes, only two teams in NHL history have started a season with a longer winning streak on the road, if I spit that out correctly.
You did.
The record is 10 consecutive road wins to start the season by the 2006-2007 Buffalo Sabres. So if the Predators are able to win tonight in Anaheim and tomorrow in San Jose, they'll have a chance to set an NHL record with a victory on Thursday at the Arizona Coyotes before they head back to Nashville for a game on Saturday against the Los Angeles Kings. I was watching that game on Saturday afternoon, and I agree with you, Ryan. Sometimes over the course of an 82-game season, you're just going to have those games. The Predators didn't play poorly through two periods, but they just didn't seem to have it.
Right.
And the fact that they were able to score two very quick goals in the third period to tie the game, then they gave up a late goal to go down 4-3, they tie the game to send it into overtime, and then Matias Ekholm scores, as Pete so exuberantly demonstrated, to win the game for the Predators. It reminds me a lot of this team last year. There was a stretch of games last year in late February, early March, where they won, I think it was, three or four consecutive games in which they trailed by multiple goals. The Detroit Red Wings just did that this week or last week, and they were the eighth team in NHL history, I believe, to do that, which means the Predators last year were the seventh team in NHL history to win three consecutive games when trailing by multiple goals in each. And that's what this game reminded me of, is that the Predators last year always seemed to find a way to win a game that maybe they didn't really have business winning,
right,
or they looked flat and they were able to hit that extra gear at the right time to get back into the game. Maybe not win it, but maybe get it to overtime, get a point. But a lot of times, of course, by winning the President's Trophy, they won a lot of games last year, and they did it in many different ways. So I feel like that was sort of a vintage Predators performance over the past couple of years, or maybe last year. I didn't think they were going to win that game, to be honest. So the fact that they were able to do that speaks highly, as it typically does, of the experience that this team has generated over the past several years.
That stretch of games you mentioned last year, they played a game. It was a complete Western road trip at Winnipeg, at Edmonton, at Vancouver, and at Colorado, where in each game they trailed by two or more goals. and they found a way to win all four of those games.
I believe that was during the period of time when they won 10 consecutive games.
It was.
Okay.
And we were texting earlier today about how this team kind of feels like the same team from last year, which is obviously a good thing because this team won the President's Trophy last regular season. But now, going into every single Preds game, I just expect them to win. I mean, last Wednesday, going into the game at Colorado, big playoff rematch. You would assume the Avalanche were up for that game. The fact that this was the first time facing the Preds since the Preds knocked out the Avalanche, and the Preds go in there and win 4-1. They were down and out, it looked like, late in the second period, going into the third period Saturday. They found a way to win. These were a lot of the same things that they were doing last year. Either they were winning games that they had little business winning, or they just pummeled teams. And we've seen a lot of that early on this season.
Well, as it has been well documented in this space and others, the Predators made the decision this offseason not to make any significant changes to their roster. And so far, that looks to be the right decision. But I think a product of that decision is that this team continues to just gain experience year after year together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Peter Laviolette will take it all the way back to 2015 when this group got its first real taste of playoff hockey in a first-round playoff series against the Chicago Blackhawks, which they lost in six games. Then the following year, they make it to a Game 7, the first Game 7 in Predators history, and win in Anaheim, then take the San Jose Sharks to a Game 7 on the road and just miss making their first Western Conference final. Then they make it to the Stanley Cup final, and then they win the President's Trophy. So there's a progression here. So I think that's why this group is good together, because these are experiences that they've all had together. I think that really, it's not tangible necessarily, but I think it really does speak to why this team is so good, because they've been through a lot together. And I think that's what you're seeing in these situations, in games where they probably shouldn't win or maybe don't have the right stuff to win a game that you think they should or shouldn't. And then they come out and play like that. They play in Colorado, like they come back in Dallas. So, I mean, I think that speaks again, as I've said many times, to the experience that this group has generated together.
And, you know, another big takeaway for me from Saturday's game is that they're finally getting offense from defense. In the first month of the season, I would argue that was something that could improve, along with some things like secondary scoring and special teams. But the offense from defense has been such a vital part of the Predators' success dating back to the 2016-17 season, in which they made that run to the Stanley Cup final. They made that run in large part because of Ryan Ellis, PK Subban, Roman Josi, and Matthias Ekholm not only dominating defensively, but chipping in a lot offensively. And Roman Josi now has 7 points in his last five games. He had the game-tying goal Saturday late in regulation, and then Matthias Ekholm with the game winner in overtime. So I think that's a pretty big positive for the Preds moving forward. Now, something that isn't so positive, Victor Arvidsson, who left the game late in the third period Saturday afternoon, was placed on injured reserve today. It was his first game back after suffering a lower body injury. He was on injured reserve, came back, and first game back, suffered an upper body injury after crashing into the boards in Dallas.
Yes, his penalty, the penalty on that play, which was a slashing penalty on Issa Lindell, was the penalty that the Predators took advantage of to score the game-tying goal from Roman Josi that you mentioned. He hit the boards pretty hard, Victor Arvidsson. He was bracing for impact, and it appeared that his left hand kind of took the brunt of the blow. The Fox Sports Tennessee broadcast caught Arvidsson as he was getting up from the ice, taking off his glove on his left hand and sort of flexing his hand, seeing how it felt, and then holding that hand as he left the ice not to come back for the rest of the game. So take infer what you will from that particular scene, but certainly not great to have a player come back from injury and then immediately get injured again.
Yeah.
Because he's on injured reserve and it's retroactive to Saturday, I assume, he'll have to miss at least the next three games. He'll have to miss tonight, Tuesday, and Thursday. I suppose that means he would be eligible to come back on Saturday. I'm not sure if that Saturday game counts as a week or if he can come back. I'll have to clarify. But he'll certainly have to miss the rest of this road trip. And now the Predators will have to find alternative sources, as they've had over the past few weeks with Victor Arvidsson out of the lineup, to star on that top line with Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson. Colton Sissons certainly has earned the opportunity with a hat trick against the Avalanche. I mean, Ryan Hartman could get a look up there. Kevin Fiala as well. I think Colton Sissons may have been the guy skating with those two at morning skate, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll see here in a couple of hours who will fill in for Victor Arvidsson against the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, and the tough part about this for the Preds is that ever since Victor Arvidsson left the lineup, which was the first game that he missed was that game at the beginning of the month at Tampa Bay, is the fact that now Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson are a little out of sync. You know, when those three are together, they're one of the top lines in the National Hockey League, as they proved in the first, 10 games of the season. And now Victor Arvidsson will be out tonight, like you said, out probably for the rest of the road trip and maybe even into the next homestand, depending on how serious this injury is. That's the tough part, is because those three together are so good, but you take any one of those three off that top line and they're simply just not as effective.
Right. As a trio, they're one of the best in the NHL, and they've proven that over the past couple of seasons. But this sort of plays into what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, where that line was basically carrying this team's offense at 5-on-5. But recently, you've seen other players step up. You saw Colton Sissons step up. You saw Ryan Hartman step up. I really have been impressed with the strides that Kyle Turris has made over the past few weeks in terms of creating offense for himself as well as others. So you're getting those contributions, and you mentioned the offense from the defense, which is a staple of this team and has been for a very long time. So the Predators aren't as top-heavy on offense as they were just a few weeks ago. So while you don't want a player as prolific at scoring as Victor Arvidsson on the sideline, at least this gives an opportunity for others, as Peter Laviolette will always say, to step up in his absence and create offense from other sources.
Coming up at 8 o'clock, it is pregame, puck drop at 9, Preds visiting the Anaheim Ducks. It is the third leg of a 5-game road trip for the Preds before they return home Saturday at home against L.A. And if you've been on social media today, you know there's already a lot of juice, a lot of talk, a lot of hype for Ryan Johansson versus Ryan Kesler. We'll get into that. Plus, are the Ducks still the Preds' biggest on-ice rival? We will answer that question coming up next. This is Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vingan of The Athletic on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
He just blows my mind. I mean, watching, I don't know what's going through his head over there, but like his family and his friends watching him play, I don't know how you cheer for a guy like that. I mean, it just doesn't make sense how he plays the game. So, you know, I'm just trying to go there and play hockey, and you know, it sucks when you gotta pull a stick out of your groin every shift.
Ryan Johansson, following Game 2 of the Western Conference Final back in 2017, the infamous quote that started this individual rivalry between Ryan Johansson and Ryan Kesler of the Anaheim Ducks. Welcome back into Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vingan of The Athletic this Monday evening. And Adam, this has definitely been appointment viewing every single time the Preds and Ducks have faced off against one another since that quote from Ryan Johansson. All eyes, every single meeting, are on Johansson and Kesler and what's next. And, you know, last regular season back in March, when the Preds went up big on the Ducks, Ryan Kesler and Ryan Johansson dropped the gloves at center ice. It wasn't much of a fight back there on March 8th, back in the regular season last year. But when these two teams face off, everyone is watching Ryan Johansson versus Ryan Kesler.
That particular quote from Ryan Johansson is one of my favorite memories from being around this team over the past 3.5 years. If you would like some comic relief, go back onto the Predators website, find the clip of that video from Game 2, right? Game 2. The 2017 Western Conference Final. And I believe I am on the camera side. So the person shooting the video, I am standing opposite of as Ryan Johansson is saying this, and I believe my facial expression as he is saying this is quite entertaining. I remember people texting me about it at the time. So if you'd like to find some intentional comic relief this evening, I advise you to search the database for that. Anyway, I love the way that these two play against each other. I mean, Ryan Kesler, you know, is the ultimate, as I believe Terry Crisp would say, shift disturber. He is certainly one of the best at that job in the NHL, and he certainly poked at Ryan Johansson in more ways than one during that Western Conference Final Series. And if you'll recall, out of the blue this summer, Ryan Kesler tweeted at Ryan Johansson, and I believe you have it up if you'd like to share it.
I do. Ryan Kesler tweeted at Ryan Johansson on August 5th. He said, "How's summer training going? Want to meet me in the streets before we get going on the ice?" That was Ryan Kesler. And then Ryan Johansson, who could probably use some Twitter training, did not tweet at Ryan Kesler his response. But Ryan Johansson did tweet in response to Kesler, quote, "I'll pay for your parking."
Now, I spoke to Ryan Johansson shortly after that exchange for my first story on The Athletic. And I asked him about his reaction and the reason why this conversation seemed to happen on Twitter. And he didn't want to go too much into it, but did say this, quote, "I don't know what he was doing that day. Clearly, I don't think he was thinking right because he made a little bit of a fool of himself." So we've been waiting for this game for a while, and there was actually some concern that Ryan Kesler may be out for the entire season.
Very good point.
But had a late start to the year, but I believe is back playing. So we certainly look forward to seeing that matchup this evening, as we always do. You know, I always enjoy watching the Predators play the Ducks, and I believe this is your next question, because of the rivalry that has developed not just between those two players, but the organizations as a whole.
Well, the fact that those two faced off back-to-back postseasons, once in the first round, an epic back-and-forth seven-game series between the Preds and Ducks, and then you have the Western Conference Final, which was back-and-forth. Every single game seemed to be back-and-forth. It was just a roller coaster series where the Preds won in six games to end up going to the Stanley Cup final. After those two playoff series, I would argue that the Predators' biggest on-ice rival was Anaheim. Do you agree? And do you think that is still the case today?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, the Ducks have never defeated the Predators in a playoff series.
Right. The Preds are 3-0 all time against Anaheim in the playoffs.
So certainly from Anaheim's perspective, I'm sure they don't appreciate the Predators very much. I contend, I believe I said this last season, and it may switch, but here's what I contended last season. If you were to ask the players who their biggest rival was, my opinion was that they would say the Ducks, just because of the battles they've had in the playoffs over the past several years. If you were to ask the fans who they thought the Predators' biggest rival was, I think they say the Chicago Blackhawks, just because of the number of Blackhawks fans that tend to find their way into Bridgestone Arena when those two teams play. Similarly to how the Predators viewed the Detroit Red Wings back in the day.
Correct.
Sort of as the big brother, little brother. So I think if you were to ask the fans who the Predators' biggest rival was, I think they would say the Blackhawks. Now, I still do believe that the Ducks are the Predators' biggest on-ice rival just because there is history there. I do believe that that is going to change. I believe that rivalry is going to be usurped by the rivalry that the Predators are developing with the Winnipeg Jets just because of how these two teams are expected to be jockeying for position at the top of the Central Division and Western Conference for years to come. We saw how great that playoff series was last year. The games are always great to watch. They're contentious. So I do think the Ducks' grip on that rivalry mantle is starting to loosen, but I do believe that they still are holding it by a fingertip.
Well, I think we will be reminded tonight why they are big on-ice rivals. And then again, later this month on a Sunday evening after Thanksgiving, when Anaheim pays a visit to the Preds at Bridgestone Arena, two matchups in the span of a couple weeks, I think we will be reminded in these two matchups why they still might be the Preds' biggest on-ice rival. Like, I agree with you. Eventually, it will be Winnipeg because I think Anaheim's about to go in a dip here. And Ryan Kesler, I think the time is ticking on his career in the National Hockey League. So, if just hypothetically speaking, if this is the final season of his career, then we don't have Johansson v. Kesler past this season. And that takes a little bit away from this rivalry between the Preds and Ducks, too.
We'll also keep in mind that the Ducks are without one of the Predators' biggest thorns in their side. That did not come out correctly, but you know what I'm saying. That wasn't eloquent. Corey Perry, because he's out for a significant period of time.
Yeah.
You know, Corey Perry has tormented the Predators in the past, and he has a little bit of that agitator side to him as well. So I think that takes a little juice out of this as well, not having Corey Perry against the Predators.
Absolutely. So if you were to say the Ducks and Jets, would you say that those are the top two right now?
Yeah.
On the ice. We're not talking about the fans. On the ice, Ducks and Jets?
Yeah, I would say that.
Who would be third?
Oh, man, that's a good question.
Would it be the Blues? Would it be the Avalanche?
I still think...
The Hawks?
I still think it's Chicago.
Okay.
I mean, I think that even though the Blackhawks are on the downturn, they just fired Joel Quenneville a week ago. They seem to not want to admit that they're in a rebuild, but that's what they probably are going to go through. I mean, they ruled the Central Division and Western Conference for a long time. So I don't think those feelings deteriorate, even if the Blackhawks aren't what they used to be. I still do think that they are. I still do think the Predators players relish those games, even if they aren't as high stakes as they used to be.
Okay. Do you think San Jose gets into this picture at all? Because those games are always highly entertaining.
Yes, they are.
Now, it's not always contentious to the point of Preds-Jets or Preds-Ducks, but let's just say if they were to meet in the Western Conference Final this year after some good regular season battles, and that's an epic series in May, we might be talking about the Sharks being in this conversation as well.
I think they're on the periphery of the conversation because there have been playoff series, and I believe the Sharks are 2-0 against the Predators in the playoffs.
All-time 3-0.
3-0.
Back-to-back in 06 and 07.
That's right. I forgot about the back-to-back. But same sort of the opposite thing with the Ducks, right? You know, the Predators have owned the Ducks in the playoffs, but the Sharks have owned the Predators in the playoffs. But
the Preds have never won a playoff game at San Jose.
That is also true, very much so. So, yeah, I think they're there too. You know, I was wondering last year whether the Vegas Golden Knights might work their way into that conversation. Not that they faced off in the playoffs, but of course, I do think that there were a lot of fans, not just Predators fans, but fans in general, that were a little salty with how good the Vegas Golden Knights were right away.
Yeah.
Especially Predators fans who rooted for an expansion team 20 years ago that did not have the opportunity to draft as much talent as the Predators did, excuse me, as the Golden Knights did at the expansion draft last year. But the Knights are banged up. They haven't had a great start to the season, so maybe that wanes, and you know, who knows. Also, the idea that Vegas is now the hot spot to be, like Nashville was, if you're going to go to a game, go to Nashville, right?
And
now
the pregame and all the pregame festivities with the castle and everything on
so
the ice.
So that might be more entertainment / fan based, but I wonder if the Knights might work their way into it too.
Preds Ducks coming up pregame at 8, puck drop at 9. Real quick before we go to break, Adam, do you expect any fireworks tonight between Johansson and Kesler?
I might see some pushing and shoving, but I don't expect anything, no headbutting, no anything like that. I don't expect Ryan Johansson to question whether Ryan Kesler's family and friends can like him.
So mild, you would say it's mild fireworks tonight.
Yes, maybe mild.
Okay, that's all coming up, puck drop at 9 out in the OC, Preds and Ducks going at it tonight. Coming up next, it's been just about a year, actually a little over a year, since the Kyle Turris trade bringing him to Nashville from Ottawa. Has that trade and his contract lived up to the billing so far? We will answer that question on the other side. You're listening to Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vingan of The Athletic. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app.
They have played 3 minutes and 25 seconds of the maximum 5-minute overtime. Here is Kyle Turris through center. Across the blue line, the shot, he scores! Kyle Turris scores in overtime, and the Predators take a 4-3 victory.
Pete Weber on the call back in October, a road game for the Nashville Predators against the New Jersey Devils when Kyle Turris scored the overtime winner. You're listening to Preds Insiders ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. I'm Ryan Porth, joined by Adam Vingan of The Athletic. This evening, Preds and Ducks coming up. Pregame at 8, puck drop at 9. All the action heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Adam, it was a year ago yesterday that Kyle Turris made his debut with the Nashville Predators, a home game against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And he scored in that debut,
which is appropriate because Predators players tend to score in their debuts after being traded to the team.
Yes, they do. And he scored in the shootout, right?
I think that he night? Did. I don't recall that. I recall the goal for sure.
Okay.
But
we need to re-rack our memories. Yes. But he did have a big night, a big debut in his Preds debut a year ago yesterday. And that came a few days after the acquisition from the Ottawa Senators, a blockbuster trade that sent Matt Duchene from Colorado to Ottawa, Kyle Turris from Ottawa to Nashville, and a lot of parts to Colorado, including a lot of draft picks. Ottawa's first-round pick this upcoming draft, which could be
very good.
Very good. And Sam Girard, Vladislav Kamenev, two Preds prospects that are now playing with Colorado. When you look back on that trade and the contract extension that came with it, 6 years, $36 million, Adam, do you feel like Kyle Turris has lived up to it so far?
For the most part, yes. Certainly, you will look to his postseason where he was largely invisible. He had 3 assists in 13 games. I think back to that playoff series against the Jets, and actually, you can even include the series against the Avalanche. And the only play that I can really recall Kyle Turris having a significant impact on was the play that he helped, that the play that he initiated that sprung Craig Smith on the 2-on-1 to Kevin Fiala to win game 2 against Winnipeg in double overtime.
Yes.
Other than that, he was very quiet. So certainly that did not bode well for the start of his contract, new contract, as you mentioned, which started this season. And within a few weeks ago, I thought that Kyle Turris, despite having at the time 8-9 points, was off to a pretty slow start. I mean, he was certainly collecting points, but I feel like he wasn't doing a lot based on the advanced numbers to create a lot of opportunities for himself. But I think you've seen a lot of that lately. You saw it with the game-winning goal against the New Jersey Devils. You saw it with a goal he scored in Tampa Bay a week and a half ago. You saw it with a goal that he scored against the Stars on Saturday, as well as the assist that he made to Matthias Ekholm. And shameless plug, I have a story online now at theathletic.com about Kyle Turris. For those who don't know, Kyle Turris's father, Bruce, is a Canadian Lacrosse Hall of Famer. So I spoke to Bruce about how Kyle's lacrosse upbringing helped develop him into the star center that you see today. But back to your question. I think for the most part, yes, he has lived up to what you expect. I believe he has 55 points in 81 games for the Predators.
You stole my thunder.
There you go. So
55 points in 81 games since being acquired. 81 regular season games. Thunder.
81 regular season games.
And then he had 3 points in 13 playoff games.
Well, I mean, think about how great that line was last year with Kevin Fiala and Craig Smith when Kyle Turris got here. I mean, Kevin Fiala, remember, did not have a goal before Kyle Turris made his debut with the Nashville Predators and finished with 23. That line was one of the best lines in the regular season last year. And Kyle Turris played a significant role in that. But, you know, I certainly do think that he has, as most players do, more to give. You know, I would like to see him score a little bit more, much like we talk about Ryan Johansson. I would like to see Kyle Turris, do more for himself. But overall, I think he's played quite well over the course of his Predators career.
You talk about scoring more and the ability to score more. I thought the clip that we heard at the beginning of the segment, the highlight where Kyle Turris takes it coast to coast like butter toast, as Terry Crisp would say, and he scores on a lethal wrist shot to win the game against the Devils. And in that moment, I'm like, why doesn't he shoot more? We always say that with Ryan Johansson, right? Dating back to last season when he was passing up almost every opportunity to shoot the puck. Why aren't we saying that more with Kyle Turris? That was a question I asked myself when that moment happened last month, that road game at New Jersey?
Well, I certainly don't have the numbers in front of me at this very moment, but perhaps because, you know, Ryan Johansson is more of a, he's a higher profile player on this team. So he gets a lot more of the attention, good and bad.
Yep.
But that, you know, Kyle Turris has shown throughout his career to be, you know, quite the goal scorer. You know, he is a pass first player, just as Ryan Johansson is. And one of the, more lighthearted anecdotes that his father shared with me for that story was that Kyle, you know, started playing organized lacrosse at age 4. And when your dad is a Hall of Famer, you're obviously going to be advanced for your age. So Bruce, Kyle's dad, had a rule for Kyle while he played lacrosse and hockey too, because he coached him in both. He only allowed Kyle to score one goal in a game. So even if Kyle had a breakaway after scoring a goal, Kyle had to look to help others. He had to go to the corner. He had to find the pass, sort of like what you saw on Saturday. I mean, that was a great pass he made to Matias Ekholm. Landed softly on Matias' stick, right in the wheelhouse for him to score that goal. So Kyle was taught, you know, to help others as much as he could help himself. So I do think that that is something that certainly plays into it. Ryan Johansson's the same way. I remember Ryan Johansson telling me that he got much more of a thrill as a kid helping others than he did scoring himself. So that's something that you see in both of them.
Well, the thing with both Turris and Johansson, when you look at the duration of their careers, is that when they shoot the puck more, they score more. It's funny how that happens, right?
Yes.
Like back in 13-14 and 14-15, Kyle Turris had back-to-back 20-goal seasons with Ottawa. And he had 215 shots on goal each season. Last year, between Ottawa and Nashville, he had 16 total goals, but he had only 145 shots on goal total for the entire season. I mean, that's 70 less shots, and he was basically shooting at the same clip that he did back in Ottawa, which is right around 10-11%. So it's just amazing what happens when you shoot the puck, right?
Like, what is the old saying? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Michael Jordan, Michael Scott.
Yes,
right, there you go.
Absolutely. Now the question that
I haven't watched The Office. I just know that
it's one of my favorite moments in Office history. Now by the end of the contract, because a lot of people have been critical of Kyle Turris because of the contract, the fact that he's making $6 million per season, including our afternoon host.
I was about to say, especially your afternoon drive host.
Jared Stillman of Jared and the GM, his big saying of pay what you owe when it comes to Kyle Turris. I kind of think by the end of this contract, it might look like a bargain by NHL standards.
Well, I think that's what you look at a lot of times with contracts that David Poile signs people to. I mean, Philip Forsberg has the same exact contract.
Yeah.
And his looks like an absolute steal. You know?
But for a number two center in the National Hockey League, I mean, right now, $6 million is about right.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, 6 years, $36 million. But say in 5 years, that might be closer to seven and a half with the way the salary cap is continuing to climb.
Yes.
Kyle Turris's contract, by the end of it, might actually look good if he keeps producing at the same clip that he is today. Can't regress for that to look like a bargain down the road.
I mean, Kyle Turris should be a 50 to 60 point scorer every season. And that might be that might be on the low end. I mean, Kyle Turris, I think, certainly has the skill to be in the 60 to 70 range. And we saw that. I mean, think about his first 18, 19, 20 games with the Predators last season. He was a point per game guy.
Yeah.
So it's there. Kyle, and the other thing too, you know, Kyle Turris, you didn't see it last year, but he certainly has developed in the past a reputation for scoring big goals in the playoffs. I mean, he certainly did for the Ottawa Senators during their run to the Eastern Conference Final.
Yep.
Before they fell in Game 7 as the Penguins went on to face the Predators in that Stanley Cup Final. So I know that we're in mid-November. Where does the time go? We're in mid-November and we're thinking ahead to April, but as we talk about a lot with this team as a whole and with individual players, they're going to be judged by what they do during the playoffs. So I would like to see Kyle Turris have a vintage Kyle Turris, meaning before last season, postseason performance. And then I think you can start paying what you owe, as Jared would say.
Well, the other point here about that contract potentially looking like a bargain, I mean, for God's sakes, Tyler Bozak got $5 million a year. Kyle Turris is worth a lot more than just $1 million in comparison to Tyler Bozak.
Well, you're going to always overpay on July 1st.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why.
It's a great point.
I mean, David Poile, that's why the Predators, this is a different subject. I'm going off on a tangent here briefly, but that's why the Predators often don't, I feel, you know, really dive into the free agent market, because you pay a lot of money for players. I mean, think about Nick Bonino, for example, and this isn't to criticize Nick Bonino, but is Nick Bonino worth $4+ million a season? Probably not, but that's what you're going to pay on July 1st, though in his game against the Colorado Avalanche, he certainly looked like a player who was worth $4 million. So there you go. But, you know, back to Kyle Turris, on the open market, Kyle Turris is not a $6 million player. Kyle Turris is like a $7 million player or an $8 million player. That might be pushing it. But the point is that Kyle Turris on the open market is not a $6 million player. He's more. So
coming up next, Austin Watson is on the verge of returning from his 18-game suspension. Who will be the odd man out when that happens? He's Adam Finkin of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in. Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm your host, Ryan Porth. Joined this evening by Adam Finkin of The Athletic. We're taking you up until 7 o'clock. That's when the Rick Stockstill Show will take over as MTSU football will take on Kentucky this upcoming weekend after a big win over UTEP. And then 8 o'clock pregame, Preds, Ducks out in Anaheim. Darren McFarland will have all the pregame coverage for you here in about an hour, 15 minutes, coming up at 8 o'clock, puck drop at 9. All the action heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Now, Adam, this is game 17 of the season, which means it is game 17 of Austin Watson's 18-game suspension, which means he is eligible to return Thursday night on the road at Arizona, the end of this road trip. He is eligible to return from suspension on that date. Do you expect him to return that night?
I do, especially because they're missing a forward now in Victor Arvidsson. They certainly have the room for Austin Watson. And I would have to do the roster math, but I think they would have to send somebody down. Or maybe not with Victor Arvidsson on injured reserve.
I don't think they would with Arvidsson on IR.
Well, I mean, Austin Watson, you know, there's a lot of complicated things that go into a conversation about Austin Watson, some of which we can talk about, some of which we don't have time to talk about. It's a very nuanced topic. But when it comes to on ice, which is, you know, large, you know, which is relevant to the conversation that we're having, you know, he certainly can help. I mean, he can help this penalty kill, which near the bottom of the league. He was a noted goal scorer, as I like to call him, last year. He had a career year. It was great in the playoffs as a two-way forward. You know, his presence will certainly boost this team's lineup. So I do think that if the opportunity is there, which it will be on Thursday when he is eligible to return, that he will make his debut against the Arizona Coyotes. That's just a guess on my part.
Who comes out of the lineup?
That's a good question. And
it depends on who's healthy, because Victor Arvidsson is on IR. Like you said, they don't really need to send anybody down to Milwaukee or make any roster change because Arvidsson is now on IR. But someone's going to have to come out of the lineup. And this is a lineup that's obviously been very successful for Peter Laviolette, even though he has brought players in and out throughout this this very successful 13-3 start.
Well, when the season started, I would have told you that player was Zach Rinaldo. But Zach has actually played quite well for himself in his role and has appeared in almost every game. He missed a couple of games due to injury, and I believe he was scratched as a healthy scratch against the Stars, but has been in the lineup more often than not.
I think he's on this roster for a little bit longer.
Yes. So that leaves someone like Mika Salamaki, who has had a solid start to the year when you look at what he's supposed to do on the ice, but Austin Watson does what Mika does and more. So Mika might be the outside looking in. You know, Freddie Goudreau is another player, but you know, Freddie plays center. Mika does have center experience, is typically a winger,
right?
So that might leave, you know, Rinaldo, Goudreau, and Watson, for example, as your fourth line on Thursday. Just spitballing here. So I really do think that maybe the player with the most to lose might be Mika Salamaki in this case.
I hear you on the fact that Salamaki and Ronaldo and Watson are all wingers and Gaudreau is a center. At the same time, for me, reality is kind of setting in on Freddie Gaudreau. And it's not a knock on him as a person because, as you know very well, Adam, you did a feature on Freddie Gaudreau back towards the beginning of the season. Great guy. It's becoming more and more evident, in my opinion, that he caught lightning in a bottle in the playoffs, especially the Stanley Cup final back in 2017 when he was thrown into the fire, scores a shorthanded goal in game one, scores the game-winning goals in games three and four against the Penguins. And this whole Freddie hockey vibe started going around Nashville, and deservedly so. I mean, he was just this unknown, this unsung hero, I guess if you want to call him that. And everyone wanted to see what he could do for an encore last year. He didn't do much. Everyone's been wanting to see him more this season. He hasn't done much. And on Saturday, he got exposed. I believe Julius Honka walked right around him at the blue line. When Gaudreau tried to go up and make life difficult, Honka goes around him, and then the Dallas Stars score a goal. I don't know about you, Adam, but for me, reality is setting in that Gaudreau might be just what he is, what we've seen the last two seasons, and that the Stanley Cup final was an anomaly.
That might be the case, which is certainly disappointing, just because, you know, Freddie Gaudreau, you know, his route to the NHL, you know, is certainly worth, you know, commemorating in the sense that he was undrafted as a junior hockey player, he was undrafted as an NHL player. He had to claw through the minors from the bottom all the way to the NHL. He did something in the Stanley Cup final that only one other person has ever done, which is score their first three career goals in the Stanley Cup final.
Amazing.
Freddie Gaudreau has not scored a regular season NHL goal.
Ever.
Ever.
He has 3 points in 27 games since those three goals in the Stanley Cup final.
And he did not make the team out of training camp last season and spent most of the season with the Milwaukee Admirals. He only played 20 games for the Predators last season, and he made the team at a training camp this year. And I think Freddie is a solid hockey player, but, you know, he certainly has his deficiencies. But yeah, I mean, the problem is that, you know, when you do what he did, you know, that is what people are going to compare you to for the rest of your career.
Yeah.
And I remember writing this in the story that you referenced, is that, you know, he's never going to live up to that. No, almost nobody could.
Unless your name is Connor McDavid.
Right. Freddie will never live up to that. And I think he is mature enough to know that that is the case. He is not delusional. He knows that, you know, his career might be defined by that segment of games, but you know what? That's a darn good memory if that's what your career is defined by. You're in the NHL record books doing something that only two people have ever done, including yourself. So that might be it. I mean, and the thing is, I believe Freddie, you know, will have to be susceptible to waivers if he is sent to the Milwaukee Admirals, and maybe he gets picked up by somebody else, and maybe he gets an opportunity elsewhere. I mean, think about a player on the other side this evening who was waived and picked up by the Anaheim Ducks recently, and that would be Pontus Aberg,
yep,
who was making some good for himself in Anaheim recently. So maybe that's the case. Now we're just, you know, we're extrapolating here, but, you know, to your point, Ryan, you learn to get to know these players as people, and it is sort of saddening that, you know, Freddie might not have the opportunity to play just because of, you know, there are other guys in this lineup who bring more to the table than he does.
Yeah. Whenever he's on the ice, I don't feel like the Preds are about to score. Let me just put it that way. And, you know, it's a great story from the Stanley Cup final. And look, he's still young. He still is young when it comes to the National Hockey League in terms of experience. So who knows? There could be another level to his game that he has not reached quite yet. But with each passing game that he gets the opportunity to play, it just, for me, becomes more and more evident that the reality is that Freddie Gaudreau may not be an NHL staple. Like, he may not be in an NHL lineup forever.
And that's fine. I mean, yeah. There are guys who make careers out of being very good AHL players. I mean, Freddie could be a 20-goal scorer in the AHL every year.
What do they call them? The 4A players in baseball?
Yeah.
Where you're too good for AAA but not good enough for Major League Baseball?
Right. So, I mean, you also have to think about other future decisions. I mean, there's probably going to come a point, maybe not soon, maybe at some point this season, where you want to see what Ellie Tolvanen does at the NHL level.
Yep.
And you're going to have to make that decision because somebody is going to have to leave. I mean, there are easy decisions, easy, quote unquote. I mean, you would think they would be simple to send Rocco Grimaldi back down, but he's played well. Rocco has in his time with the Predators in the preseason and during the regular season. So, I mean, it's a good problem to have, right? They have a lot of depth. They have a lot of options. It's a good problem to have, but you know, someone's going to have to be on the outside looking in. And with each passing game, you know, Freddie Goudreau seems to be putting himself in that position, whether it's his own doing or the play of others around him that is better.
You mentioned Pontus Aberg. He has 5 goals in 12 games with the Ducks this year.
And some nice ones too,
yes.
I think.
Now, an interesting nugget of those 5 goals, all of them came in losses.
Huh.
So maybe the Preds should hope he scores tonight when they face off the Preds and Ducks, right?
Well, history seems to suggest that.
Or maybe at some point he's going to score a goal and a win. At some point this season, you would think.
Yes, and Pontus is Pontus is another one of those players. I mean, he has the skill to play in the NHL, and he had a great postseason during the Stanley Cup Final run, playing on the top line.
I mean, we're talking about two players who really flashed in the Stanley Cup Final for the Preds: Pontus Aberg at the time.
Yes, it was Aberg at the time,
and he had that great goal in Game 2 in Pittsburgh, and then he had Freddie Gaudreau scoring 3 goals,
scored the game winner in that Game 5 win against the Ducks to send the series back to Nashville.
Yep,
and Pontus did.
Yeah, and you felt like those were two players that the Preds could
build
around.
Off of, yes,
not build their franchise around, but you know, could
build
be
off
key
of.
Depth players
yes.
Moving forward. And Aberg is no longer in the organization, and Gaudreau, I think, you know, really has to step it up here in the next couple weeks if he wants to stay in the lineup. Mm-hmm. Pre-game at 8, puck drop at 9 between the Preds and Ducks. All the action heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan of The Athletic, thanks as always for stopping by.
My pleasure, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
For Adam Vingan, I am Ryan Porth, the host of Preds Insiders. All of it is brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. Thanks for listening on ESPN 102.5 The Game.